to GalacticConnection.com, one of the most popular blogs on the World Wide Web today for alternative news. Stay tuned for the latest information on our world shift from enslavement to galactic involvement, as well as current intel on any blockages impeding us from our sovereign birthright. Knowledge and self-mastery are key at this time. Our commitment is to present you with the latest breaking conspiratorial articles, off-world messages, exopolitics, cutting-edge technologies and sciences, and also an ever-significant intertwining of spiritual support and metaphysical scope that one needs to dive down the rabbit hole and search for truth with balance. We are truly on the horizon of a new golden age filled with the promise for more love, worldwide peace, and accelerated intuitive skills, where every living being can exist in cohesion and abundance. It is whatever we envision and dream this new world to be. I say to you now, let's redefine the new world to the beginnings of our own precious heaven on Earth. Galactic Connection is here to provide the pulse of Mother Earth through an eclectic range of interviews each Tuesday afternoon from 3 to 4:55 p.m., Pacific Standard Time, Station 2 on BBS Radio, expanding your perspectives on how we can once and for all take back our freedoms, our joy, and our connection with our mighty I Am presence. Our intention remains true to connect hearts and minds everywhere in order to obtain global unity and galactic and universal acceptance. Our discussions will continue to cover anything to do with galactic society and our involvement with our galactic brothers and sisters. Our guests are experts in their fields, and our radio shows have been coined as some of the most thought-provoking out there. In addition to our daily blog, which runs 365 days a year, we also offer a realm of healing services such as our world-renowned implant removal processes, our spiritual past life clearings, our galactic violet ray alchemy from Alexandra, who shares in the lineage of Merlin, and other cutting-edge healing technologies. Check our site out at galacticconnection.com now. Sending you a wave of light, love, and inspiration, and a personal hug and thank you for listening to our Galactic Connection radio show and visiting our blog today. Hi, everybody. This is Alexandra Metters of GalacticConnection.com, and this is a pre-recorded interview for January 26th, 2016. This is Tuesday, BBS Radio Station 2 from 3 to 4:55 p.m. So tune in. Check us out. And of course, you can find us on Vimeo. You can find us on YouTube. You can find us on the blog. You can just find us just about everywhere. We're on every block in the spiritual community. So today I want everyone to meet Sonia Francis. And I heard one of her videos and I was taken back, quite honestly. I find her to be very refreshing, and the fact that she's reading astrology through such a, I hate to use the word channel because it has so much negativity around it, but she's clearly tapping into a very multidimensional force of beings that are bringing through a very nice flavor and essence of how to see astrology. And so I just want to give you a little bit of background on her. And one of my favorite cities on the planet is Vienna, Austria. And Sonia is originally from there, which must be, that's probably our connection. And she's a student of astrology for well over 20 years. She's been a member of National Council for Geocosmic Research since 1997. Sounds interesting. She's also written monthly horoscopes for MahayalaLife.com. She has been interviewed in various radio shows on the internet, such as A Charmed Life, The Real Manifest Show, and That's the Beauty of It All, along with some others. She's also been a guest on Astrology Numerology Now, a TV show hosted by Z Starman. She is currently enjoying sharing her online soul-based astrology curriculum, which is really interesting. You guys need to check it out, as well as teaching in-person soul journey courses all over the world. Her passions are really to connect people and help them transform their lives. And she's also added a bit of the life coaching in with it, which is what really I feel makes her very unique. Now, while we are talking, please access her website at astrologercoach.com. And we're going to go ahead and get started. And, you know, Sonia, I have always wanted to bring in an astrologer. I just been wearing way too many hats and don't spend enough time to really plan out all my interviews. So they just kind of come in through guidance. You were definitely guided to me. Okay. And I was really looking at the flavor of 2016. I feel that the majority of the people out there really want to hunker down as to how they want to structure this year for themselves, what kind of things they want to change this year, what types of energies they want to take advantage of to really, you know, kind of wipe the slate clean.
Yes.
And before we get started, everyone, Sonia and I are doing, we're teaming up with a promotion. And this way, you're getting the best of both worlds. You're supporting Galactic Connection. Yay. Okay. Because, you know, I've been doing this gratis forever and a day, and I really need financial support. Our expenses continue to rise, especially with all the security issues. And so she is going to team up with me to provide a New Year's special offer. Do you want to go ahead and just tell them a little bit about that first before we dive in?
Yeah. So the New Year's special offer is really a reading that supports you in preparing yourself a little bit for the whole year to see what's coming up in terms of aspects for yourself and how you can make some more powerful choices for the year. And so what I will be doing is I'll be looking at your birth chart in relationship to the transits as they are progressing throughout the year. And I will look at several charts to see like how do these things align in your chart and what to watch out for and what is supportive, what are some opportunities. So, and it's a great reading because it really helps set sort of like an intention for the year. It helps set sort of like a feeling more grounded in what you want to be doing and how you want to be doing it for the year. So it's a fantastic reading. Perfect. And then I'm also going to be offering a free intro to soul-based astrology for anybody who wants to book the reading with me. So that's like a bonus feature on top of, you know, that's only for Galactic Connections.
Fantastic. So they'll be able to access this promo on Sonia's website. If you just access her website at astrologercoach.com, she'll be able to send you, you know, hopefully you'll have like a button or a banner up there that says Galactic Connection.
Well, actually, if you go to my website, there will be something that says the New Year Special.
Perfect.
And if you see that, you click on that, and then you get directed to a page where you can buy the New Year Special. And once you buy it, we'll automatically send you the bonus video. And I'm also going to ask you to fill out a form on my website, and that helps with setting up our session.
Right on. So please support her and us, because you're doing the best of both worlds, because check it out. It's a triad, guys. You know, I'm really into triads. So it's supporting you, Sonia, and me. So that's good. So Sonia, you know, everybody talks about astrology. They talk about how it's your soul map. It's your way of maneuvering through this crazy 3D reality. And it gives you the opportunity to make more powerful decisions, to be able to be more prepared for certain events, you know, things like that. Being able to really see what energies are going to support you as an individual. How do you feel you are different? Because there's so many astrologers out there and there's so many different opinions. Yeah. So how do you vary from the rest of the world?
Well, I would say that my specialty is the point of view that I take when I talk about astrology. I always try to approach it from a soul's perspective, and I try to approach it in a way that is empowering to the individual and that helps us make clear, grounded, informed decisions based on the heart and the head. So I really try to bring in a lot of the heart energy into my readings and a lot of compassion. And because I'm also a life coach, I really believe that everybody's whole and complete, and that the astrology chart really supports us in seeing how we can embrace ourselves more fully and really become more whole. So it's really approach a holistic approach and an approach of empowerment and connecting all the dots within yourself, you know, rather than rejecting parts of yourselves, you know, to just kind of like really incorporating and appreciating everything that you are.
Perfect.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. And that's right up our alley. Definitely. I have a very enlightened audience and they're going to totally get that. Yeah. And you know, the other thing that I wanted to ask you was, there are so many different approaches to astrology out there. You have Vedic astrology, you have Chinese type astrology, all these different ones. And apparently there are 10 recognized planets that most astrologers use. And in fact, some only use 5. And so I'm curious, what do you use and why?
So I was trained and I've been studying astrology since the early 90s. And I basically was trained in Western tropical astrology, which is astrology that is based on the seasons, on the spring equinox. Mm. So the first sign, which is Aries in the zodiac signs, starts with the spring equinox. And that's what I was trained in, and that's what works for me. I know there are a lot of other systems out there, and a lot of people use, you know, astrology in different ways. But just in my own experience, you know, as many charts as I've read so far in my life, you know, that system works for me. So I think it's a very powerful system.
And in fact, I guess when I dove into it a little bit further, I noticed that some of the astrologers, they either place the earth as the center of the chart, or they place the sun as the center of the chart. And for all those flat earth theorists out there, what do you say to that? You know, what do you feel is the most important and why?
Well, when I look at a chart, when I print out a chart from, you know, from one of my computer systems, there's definitely the earth is the center of the chart. And then you have all the planets that are in the circle around it, right? As far as planets go and what's most important, I mean, they're all important, right?
Right.
Of course, definitely. If I come from a holistic standpoint, I would say that there's no one planet that's more important than another. But of course, you know, the sun, you know, the sun is our consciousness. It's our extroverted personality, and it's our masculine side. And so the sun is usually in the Western world is what has a lot of emphasis in the Western world, because it's masculine, because it's extroverted, because it is, you know, the center, you know, of our solar system. And the sun represents in a chart, the sun represents really what we're here to connect with, so that we can fully be energized in what we're doing on this planet at this particular point in time. So the sun is like our engine. It's our source, right? It sources us. So if you have, I don't know, what's your sun sign?
Sun sign Virgo.
Virgo. So if you are a Virgo sun sign, it's very important for you to tap into the higher vibrations of the Virgo energy, so you can feel most energized in what you're doing. So you can feel that your engine is well oiled and is well working. It's like, you have to think of it like the engine of a car. You know, if you pay attention to it and you give it all that it needs, and you keep nurturing the engine, then the car will run well. Right.
Right.
And same is true with our sun signs. We have to connect to the higher vibrations of our sun signs. And when we catch ourselves in the lower vibration of our sun signs, it's important that we take a look at the opposite sign of our sun sign. So in your case, that would be Pisces, right? So by finding that balance between Virgo and Pisces, you can more fully tap into the higher vibrations of Virgo.
So it's all about balance.
Yes.
Interesting. Instead of just focusing on one astrological sign.
Yes, that's futile. You don't want to do that.
Yeah, I bet. Well, and you mentioned that you start with April 1st, I believe is what you said, or Aries.
With the spring equinox.
With the spring equinox. Okay.
March 21st.
I am so curious. What is your perception on the precession of the Earth? Many people are talking about right now, because of the precession of the Earth and the fact that the Earth is on a different time cycle now, and that, you know, we run in this cyclical pattern of 25,000 years and et cetera, that many of us actually have the wrong gist of what our true sun sign is.
Right. And that has been a discussion for a really long time. And it is sort of the discussion between sidereal astrology and tropical astrology, right? Because sidereal astrology is based on the star constellations as you see them in the sky, where else tropical astrology is based on the seasons and on the equinoxes. So the energetic alignment of Aries with the spring equinox makes the most sense for me personally, because if you think about spring and the energy of spring and how things are, you know, start trying to make their way from underneath the earth into life, right? There's like the sprouting that happens in spring. That's a very Aryan energy. You know, Aries is all about, you know, starting something new, being the front runner of something, you know, being someone who's brave enough to get out and do something, right? And so if you think of that energy and you think of the spring energy, you know, right around March 21st and the beginning of spring, that to me is a resonance. You know, that to me makes an energetic, that's an alignment that makes sense to me. Whereas if you think about in sidereal astrology, March 31st, that would be Pisces. And Pisces is extremely slow and intuitive and introverted and is very feeling oriented and very intuitive and very sensitive. That does not resonate with me with that springtime, you know, because the springtime, that's an energetic time, you know, where things happen, where things start.
Where you're like stepping out, going in.
Stepping out, exactly. Yeah. For the first time, you're like, ooh, I can smell it. I can smell the spring. I can smell life. You know what I mean?
True.
So to me, that's why I'm more inclined to believe in the tropical system than the sidereal. And, you know, look, I'm not want to make anybody wrong. You know, obviously there are lots of people out there who believe in the sidereal system.
Sure.
And that's totally fine with me. And I do believe that, you know, everybody has their own system that works for them, you know? But for me, that's what works best for me. And as far as the precession of the Earth axis is concerned, that is something.
Oops. Okay. Now you left off with the sidereal astrology and you said, hey, don't get me wrong, I'm not slamming the sidereal astrology, and then go from there.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I think that whatever works for other people, you know, is, you know, what works for them. But I kind of have to look at what works for me best and what makes the most sense for me, right? And
oh, great.
Just in terms of my own practice and my own experiences, that works for me, right? Mm-hmm. But as far as the precession of the Earth is concerned, that's very much connected to the star constellations in the sky, right? And the star constellations in the sky are not necessarily connected to the seasons. So again, it's there's a difference, and that has to do with the precession of the Earth, because when the Earth, so when astrology first started in 3,900 years ago in the Babylonian times, sidereal and tropical astrology was completely aligned.
Interesting.
It was the same thing. Because of the Earth's axis.
Huh.
But then the Earth axis shifted, and that's when sidereal and tropical astrology started to drift apart, because sidereal astrology is connected to the star constellations in the sky, and tropical astrology is connected to the seasons.
Got it.
So that's where the disconnect started to happen with that precession of the Earth. So in a sense, that axis, that change of the Earth's axis has created that divide in a sense.
Right. And you know, that feels a lot better to me, because it's more of like the goddess energy and really acknowledging the influence that Mother Earth has on each of us. So feels right. But anyway, I wanted to ask you, if we were in ancient times, 3,900 years ago, how would they have been using an astrologer then?
Well, obviously it was a lot more simple then than it is now, because the knowledge that, people had about the sky and the universe outside of what they could see was not, you know, there wasn't any technology, so they weren't able to access what we're able to access now, right? I mean, right. Our consciousness now and our ability to use technology has really tremendously put us ahead of like what we're able to perceive, right. You know? And of course, 3,900 years ago, that wasn't the case. So what it was for, what it was used for mostly and that in those days was the sun movement and the moon movement, right? So anything that you could actually see with the naked eye is what people used most. So it was used for trying to predict some kind of weather patterns or, you know, what the weather would be doing in terms of the floods and in terms of like ebb and flow with the ocean, with the moon, you know, and then in terms of planting, you know, there was sort of like they discovered that there was a rhythm in which, you know, that the moon moves, that planting is most efficient to follow that rhythm of the moon. And then also I think for time, right, the sun was used to look at, okay, when is it, you know, morning, when is it noon, and when is it evening, right? And so, and then eventually it was used for, to create a calendar, you know, so that people could understand a sense of time and timing.
Right, right.
I mean, I think that was the very beginning of astrology, and then it slowly started to go from there.
I mean, a lot of people have this question. I've heard that kings and queens had their own astrologer on council, that it was just like an absolute imperative component to running their kingdoms. How accurate was it in predicting, you know, weather, wars, and things like that?
Well, that I mean, I wasn't there, so I don't know, to be honest.
Come on, you don't know that?
But I mean, I would say that probably it was a that some of it must have been at least 50-50, because if they kept these people around, you know, there must have been some way for them to predict certain things, and otherwise these people would have been beheaded very quickly and very easily, you know, and gotten rid of.
That's true.
So the fact that they were able to stick around tells me that there must have been some accuracy with that.
Oh God, that's too, okay. So tell us a little bit about what was Sonia's introduction to astrology? You know, like, why did you find yourself so immersed in this subject?
That's actually a great story. I was on my way to Australia with a friend of mine, and she gave me a book about Buddhism. And in that book, the author, who was actually a German psychologist, a German psychologist who talked about Buddhism, and then he mentioned astrology in the book as well, and he said something like, as above, so below, it's like astrology. And when I read that sentence, I was like, I was kind of hooked all of a sudden. I was like, ah, this is fascinating, yes, because what's happening outside of us is what's happening inside of us. And suddenly that made sense to me. I don't know why it made sense to me at the time, but I think I was always a very curious person, you know, in general. So, and I was 19 at the time. So I started buying astrology books. And then when I moved to New York in 1994, I started taking part at with these astrology courses, the NCGR, which is this astrology community that I'm a part of. They do seminars and they teach courses in New York on a bi-yearly basis, where they have like a big conference. And so I would just go to these conferences, you know, twice a year, and then I would, you know, get my readings, and I would start reading my own books. And so that's kind of how I started getting more and more and more involved, until, you know, I had mentorships with astrologers in New York, and
right on.
And just was really a big part of the community with other astrologers. And then in 2005, I did a certification in astrology through NCGR. And then in 2010, I started my own business. And the thing was, the reason why I started my business so late was because my belief system was a little bit too narrow up until that point. I couldn't believe that I was able to make money with astrology. So in 2005. And so I didn't start a business right away. But in 2010, one of my Reiki masters that works with me, energetically speaking, Reiki and crystal stuff and things like that, she wanted me to teach her a little bit about astrology because she was curious about it. And after that, she said to me, you have to start a website with astrology. You have to do something with astrology. She's so good at it. And so I thought, well, why not try it? You know, like, let's give it a shot. And at that point, I was already a life coach as well.
Perfect.
So I could combine the two and just connect them, you know.
You know, Sonia, I think astrology is a lot like numerology. We have a fascination for it. And really, it's because we're tapping into past life memories and ways in which we were able to function within the kind of the Saturnian cyclical system and make sense out of it. Yeah. I feel like we've really been pulled away from that. I mean, even the calendars today, the Gregorian calendar, for example, is apparently off by, what is it, like 3 to 5 days or something. So
man-made calendar.
Correct. And we've lost that connection
with,
you know, with the seasons. Like you said, we've lost that connection of how do we function and how do we operate with the land, the ground that we walk on. So that's, I mean, I think there's a real upsurge of people getting interested again in astrology.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh my God. I've noticed that so big time. There's so many more people interested in astrology. Even people that would have, you know, 5 years ago, they would have never even bothered just looking at anything connected with astrology, that are now kind of getting curious and going like, well, let me take a look at it. Let me see what it's about.
Yeah, you know? Realizing it's not, you know, this demon-based, oh my God, you know, it's bad news and all that stuff.
Silly thing and newspapers about.
So question, you know, many astrologers have been apparently really simplified and popularized astrology as a presentation to the world.
Yeah.
You know, and it's almost like it's become kind of tainted. I mean, what is your feeling about that? You know, what do you feel that has done for the perspective of what astrology offers today?
I would say commercial astrology serves a purpose because it is for the masses.
Okay.
However, what it doesn't serve is it doesn't serve the actual understanding of astrology, because astrology is so much more complex and it's so much more bigger than what is presented in commercial astrology. You know,
right.
What commercial astrology does is it focuses on the sun signs. Right? It focuses on purely the sun and the sun signs. But of course, that's a very, very limited view of astrology, because that's just one planet out of, you know,
like a gazillion.
Gazillions out there and asteroids and whatever there is available. I mean, personally, I think there is something to say for, you know, not using every single asteroid and every single planet that is out there in the universe, because it gets too complex and too overwhelming to read a chart that way. But there is definitely, in order to really honor every person's or every individual's complexity and who they are, you have to incorporate the sun, the moon, Venus, Mercury, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, and so on. Do you know what I mean? Because that's part of who that person is. If you only take out the sun sign and you're not looking at the rest of it, then you're really just kind of, it's kind of like saying, I'm only going to look at your right eye and I'm not going to judge what you look like from that.
Huh.
That's not, you know, that doesn't serve anything.
No, it doesn't. Well, and what about the fact that they always start from the time of birth? Is it super crucial? Like, I have a girlfriend right now who was adopted. She has absolutely no clue when she was born. And she's kind of bummed because she never knows if she can get a really accurate astrological reading because of that. My question is, you know, there's supposedly an argument about, do they base the chart on at the time of conception, which basically most of us don't even know when that is. versus the actual date of the birth?
Personally, I think you can make a chart for anything. You can make a chart for any moment in time, right? Because any moment in time holds a particular energy. But when it comes to reading an individual chart, I would personally, in my experience, it's most powerful to use when the person was born, when they took the first breath. Because when you take your first breath, that is the beginning of life.
That's a good point. Here.
On this planet. The beginning of life on this planet, right? In human form.
Yeah.
So if you want to look at that human life and that human experience, then I would say use the birth chart from the moment you took your first breath. But if you want to look at other things like past lives, you know, I mean, I'm not a huge fan for necessarily looking into past lives only because I feel that it can be confusing to the person's now life, right?
Mm. In what way?
I mean, I think that sometimes it can be helpful if someone has like a phobia or something that they can't explain to themselves in this lifetime. I think it's a valuable tool to use to look into a past life to help the person, support the person, integrating certain things that have happened in a past life if it's connected to this lifetime. But I think in general, our curiosity about past lives is almost like taking us away from what this life is all about and what we're here to do right now. And so I feel that for most people, it's not necessarily something that's necessary to do. For some people, I think it is. And I've personally done past life regression myself. So I'm curious about anything and everything.
Yeah, me too.
But I do feel that you know, just in terms of being able to, just in terms of empowerment and feeling that you're doing your life's path and you're on your life's journey and you're fulfilling your soul purpose in this lifetime, I feel that it's crucial to focus on this lifetime. That's just my own personal opinion about that. You know?
Yeah, living in the now. And I mean, I do see advantages from the standpoint of understanding yourself a little bit more in depth as far as your mission.
Yeah,
you know, like, you know, if you see some of the patterns and habits that you've been carrying, you're more apt to understand your calling in this lifetime. You know, it's not going to kind of hit you upside the head. You're going to go, oh, okay, wow, I get that.
Absolutely. And you can see that in the birth chart as well. If you look at the south node in your birth chart, the south node will give you a lot of information about your past patterns and your soul energy as you're coming in, you know, things that you need to be aware of. And so you can see,
isn't that the stuff you have to like heal, right?
Well, the stuff from the past is either stuff that are gifts that you're coming in with.
Okay.
Or it's stuff where you are not conscious, where you run on an autopilot.
Okay.
Patterns where you run on an autopilot because you've done it for so many times and you've been this energy or this person for so many lifetimes that you can't see it anymore. You know, you can't see that's really, that is a blind spot. You know, it's like having a blind spot.
Now, I am so curious. What was your interpretation of all the planets going direct on December 25th, 2015? I really want to hear this.
So on the 25th, what happened was we had a full moon in Capricorn, and we had Uranus, the planet Uranus, stationing direct. So that was the planet that went direct that day.
Okay.
And that's, I mean, Uranus is an important energy because it's about progress. You know, Uranus is the energy of freedom, progress, breaking away from the old, breaking away from tradition, from things that are in a rut that are no longer sustainable, you know? So Uranus really wants us to see things differently, do things differently. It's a very rebellious energy. It's a very freedom-oriented energy. And it's an energy that wants us to move forward in a way that functions better than what we've done before, right?
Okay.
So Uranus basically changes directions every 6 months, approximately. All the outer planets do. So all the outer planets, Uranus, Neptune, Pluto, and to some extent Chiron as well. Chiron is not a planet, it's an asteroid, but I kind of put it into that same family because it connects the outer planets with the inner planets. So those will pretty much go retrograde and direct every 6 months, right? So you will have that happening. And when something goes direct, it means that the energy has a surge forward, that there's something that we're kind of like, all of a sudden we're like, you know, we have the wind in our back and something's moving forward, right? Because this direct motion on December 25th happened at the same time as a full moon, that's important because a full moon, that's a lunation where we have the most awareness, right? During the time of the full moon, it's an extroverted time. It's a time of awareness where we're seeing things more clearly. We're seeing what's going on outside of us, inside of us. There's like a recognition, right, with a full moon. It's also a more heightened emotional time during the full moon. So having a planet go direct at the same time as the full moon brings more of an awareness to where we're at in that moment. You know, like where we need to move forward. Where do we need to make changes? Where do we need to bring humanity or catch up humanity and the planet's condition, catch it up to where we want it to be? Right? Because, I mean, as most people know, you know, I mean, as human history goes, we've not been very good to the planet so far, you know?
Yeah. That's an understatement.
There hasn't been a really conscious approach to that, you know, by most people. Yeah. I mean, I think that there is definitely certain tribes and certain people that have a very conscious approach to the planet, but it's not the majority of people. And I would say that the masses are still learning about that. And I think that we're moving into a time where it becomes more and more crucial to pay attention to the planet and to pay attention to how we treat the planet, because we're becoming more aware that the planet has a relationship with us, that we have a relationship with the planet. It's not something to conquer, and it's not something to overpower. It's a relationship. It's a give and take. And, you know, with all the weather patterns that are happening, that are changing, that are shifting, with the earth kind of like communicating to us, you know, like through earthquakes and through natural disasters, the earth is saying to us, you know, like, hello, you know, please, you know, pay attention to me, honor me, you know, nurture me, you know, consider me, you know, consider what I am and what I am for you. Because without the earth, obviously we can't live. So
respect me. Respect and love me and acknowledge that I am your mother.
Exactly. And it is the mother. And so
totally.
It's like we're by cutting ourselves off from that relationship, we're really cutting ourselves off from ourselves, from our human nature as well. Because the earth is the planet is the most earth-based and material-based thing that we have, right?
Okay.
There is nothing more substantial than the planet that we live on, you know? And the human body, the physical body, is also, you know, part of that, you know? So anything that's material, anything that you can touch or that you can see or taste or, you know, feel in that way has to do with the material body, you know? And so when we ignore the earth, we're ignoring the fact that we are part of this material plane, part of this material body. And of course, that's not helpful in our human experience, because we're just kind of like going against what we are. We're really, it's destructive, you know, it's self-destructive.
Yeah, and we are really being pushed right now to reconsider every single thought,
yes,
action,
yes,
reaction. I mean, every errand that we are performing, everything is starting to become conscious,
yes,
participation. It's not programmed and robotic and, oh, I just do this all the time because I just do this all the time.
We definitely have to take responsibility for what each one of us puts out, you know, how we treat our environment, other people, ourselves. There's definitely a strong need for working with that on a conscious level.
Totally agree. Yeah. Now, you know, for all the people out there listening, I have obviously a huge audience with starseed connections. And one of the biggest questions I think we all have is, how do you figure out someone's connection to their star families through the chart?
Well, the way I would interpret that is that, you know, that when you look at the birth chart, you see in which signs are occupied by the planets. And so if you have a stronger occupation in Pisces, for example, then you would belong more to the Pisces family. You know, that would be more your energetic alignment would be more in that family.
But Sonia, are you basically saying too that like this, the Pisces family is the literal star Pisces system, right? And those star systems within Pisces?
I think so, yeah.
And it's so logical, but I just,
that's what makes most sense to me.
Yeah.
I might not be correct about that, but that's what makes most sense to me. Yeah.
How do meteors affect the human psyche, and how does that play into the chart? You know, meteors and
That's a good question. I mean, I would say that meteor showers obviously have an energetic impact and a physical impact if they, you know, impact the Earth's plane.
Okay.
Right. I would also say that meteor showers is definitely something that's a little bit more connected to astronomy, you know, rather than astrology. When you talk about astrology, you really are looking at, you know, again, like the seasons, the planets, in what signs they are, in what houses they are in relationship to the Earth. You know, what is the distance between the Earth and the planets, and how did that play out at a particular time? Because each moment of time has an energetic blueprint, right? And so that's what you look at in astrology. The meteor showers are not, I'm not saying that they don't have an impact, but I think it's not necessarily an energetic impact that you can read in astrology, but there's definitely an energetic impact. You know, I mean, everything is energy, you know, everything is energy, your thoughts, your body, your feelings, you know, everything that you see around you, everything that's out there in the universe, everything is energy. And so energy, of course, has an impact on energy, you know, like energy meets where it most resonates with each other.
So it's really more about regular planetary movements versus kind of non-normal, non-predictable, you know, showers that, I mean, do the astrologers find, because they make such a big deal about all these meteor showers, and there's more and more of them apparently, right?
Well, I think that it's more astronomers that make more of a big deal out of these meteors than astrologers.
Okay.
And I think that is because it's like with anything, when you're part of a particular group of people and you're observing, you know, as an astronomer, your job is to observe the sky, to observe the what's out there. And whenever there's anomalies, whenever there's something new that's happening or something that's happening that hasn't happened in like 2000 years, then of course an astronomer is going to go, oh my God, you know, whoa, you know, something. Not that it doesn't mean that it doesn't have an energetic impact on our collective and what we're experiencing, but it's definitely, you know, the reason why it's happening and the reason why we're able to perceive it and see it is because our consciousness is ready to see it. You know, I believe, I mean, the fact that all these new planets and these new asteroids have been discovered, they have been discovered because our psyches and our ability to comprehend things and to process things has grown. We're growing, you know? I mean, and that's why, especially in the last 100 years, you know, the amount of planets and asteroids that have been discovered in the last 100 years has been exponentially much bigger than what happened the previous 2,000 years.
That's what I was going to ask you. There's so many heavenly bodies being discovered now and so many other similar Earths being discovered just in our solar system right now. I was wondering, does that impact the astrological reading, or is it really more about, that's what I like about you, is you're really pulling down the information from somewhere other than just your mind and, okay, I've got to figure out the angle between this planet and, you know, this house, right?
I mean, that comes into it as well, but it's a combination of the what I've learned and the intuitive, you know. It's sort of like I pull it together. I call it intuitive science.
Have you always been intuitive?
If you would ask my mom, she would probably say yes. Yes. Personally, I don't know. I it's not like I'm not, I definitely wasn't one of those kids that was like thinking to herself, ooh, I'm so intuitive. You know, I wasn't thinking about it. You know what I mean? It was just something, I think, that was a part of me always, but it wasn't, I didn't feel that it was abnormal or different or weird.
Right.
I could just feel things and I could just sense things, but I never thought of it as intuitive. You know, I thought of it as like, oh, that's just how it works. That's just how it is.
It'd be really interesting to see how many lifetimes you've had as an astrologer.
Yeah, actually someone told me that I was a seer in Egypt.
No, really? Gee, folks, you think she was in the Egyptian time frame? No.
But I don't know. Personally, I don't remember it.
That's okay. I mean, I'm sure everybody's going to chuckle on that one. Okay, now this, I wanted to ask you about this. Okay, so here is all this discussion right now going on about Saturn and Mars and Jupiter, and, you know, each one of them carries a specific frequency.
Yes.
Each of them carries a specific essence, and that essence, of course, impacts us in the way that we kind of run our lives and be.
Yeah.
And each one of them, depending on what your enlightenment level is, each one of them is a body, is a potentially an archetype of a god. I firmly believe that they were related to, you know, the Greek mythology and that kind of thing. Yeah. And for a lot of people, they don't realize that planets are beings that are, you know, potentially of a higher state of consciousness, perhaps. And I'm curious, does that play a piece in your readings?
Well, yes. I mean, yes and no. Yes. I mean, I would say that what plays a part in my readings is that every planet represents an archetype, an energy, that when I see what the planet is doing in relationship to a person's chart or just in that person's chart, I will interpret that to that person in such a way that they can understand how that energy operates within themselves. So it's almost like you have to think of it like there is a small little universe inside of us, right?
Absolutely.
And so the outside universe is really just sort of like a mirror, a reflection of our inner universe, right?
Right, right.
And the chart, you know, the birth chart represents what that energetic blueprint or that pattern looked like at the time of your birth. And that is sort of like that is the potential, the life potential that you come in with. Because it's kind of like, you have to think of it like a little seed, right? Like every seed that you plant in the earth already has the potential of the full grown plant or the full grown tree in it. It's just that, you know, as you plant the seed, you need to, you know, nurture it, give it water, give it time, you know, to grow, to come out of there, to sprout out of the earth, to become bigger, to grow until it has reached its fullest potential. And that's how I see the birth chart as well. You know, the birth chart is the seed. You know, that's our, yes.
I just have to say something, you know, because we have this conversation a lot. I really want people to hear what you're saying, because each one of us has this well of potentiality.
Absolutely.
Whether it is painting or sculpting or running a business or bringing up children or teaching or speaking or whatever.
Absolutely.
The one thing that we got a little bit duped on was the way in which our environment was provided to us, programmed around us.
Yeah, the conditions.
And yeah, and therefore, you know, our environment, which created the way in which we make decisions and we think about ourselves, yeah, is not who we are.
Yes, and that's where astrology is so valuable. Because you can read a chart and you can tell a person, you know, this is who you are. All of this, not just that little slice of pie that you were made believe that you are. You know, because very often we, the way we grow up, the way we're conditioned, we will sort of be put in a tiny little cube, you know, and we were told, this is who you are, or this is who you ought to be. Right? The shoulds that we get and the, you know, no, you can't be this, you know, that's not acceptable. And the thing is, what I think what's shifting now in our lives is that we're learning that it's okay to be different, that it's okay to be ourselves, that our individuality is becoming stronger. The permission that we're having to be ourselves and to be individuals is becoming stronger, and there's more acceptance around it. And that's part of the shift that's happening also, that you can see astrologically speaking, you know, that Uranus-Pluto square that's been going on since 2011, you know, and that's now fading out. That's been, you know, that's, it's like a shift. We got to shift something that started in the 60s. You know, everyone born in the 60s had a Pluto-Uranus conjunction. And that conjunction was clearly saying, we need to empower ourselves and our individual selves. You know, we need to make a difference in the world by being ourselves, by being our most powerful selves.
That's so much in line with the first waivers of energetics that this transition into the new world age could never have happened without that conjunction, or whatever you call it, right?
That was a very powerful, that was very important. The 60s were an important time.
But we're actually reliving that now, right? I mean, we have another kick in the pants going on.
Well, what's happening is with that Uranus-Pluto square, it's an opening square, which means that now that the cycle of the planets is always, it starts with a conjunction, then there's an opening square, then there's an opposition, then there's a closing square, and then there's another conjunction. So that's the cycle between two planets, right? Yeah. And if you have powerful outer planets like Pluto and Uranus, who are both very powerful and very much connected to the collective, right?
Right.
It really creates collective shifts, you know? But of course, the collective shifts come from each individual as well, right? So each individual partakes in the collective shift,
right?
But there are more individuals that are waking up and that become more aware of needing to make that shift and needing to express their individuality more fully.
That's so accurate. Now what about, how does, in your perspective, how does the Mayan calendar fit into all this? Do you kind of take that into consideration when you're, especially as a life coach, I would think that would really broaden your horizons in the way you see astrology big time.
The Mayan calendar, you know, ended in 2012, right?
Correct.
And I think the reason why it ended in 2012 is not because the tribe thought that life would end at that point.
Right.
I think that they couldn't actually see beyond 2012, because the shift that happened at that time was so great you know, the consciousness shift that's been going on for the past 4 years has been so great that I think at the time that the tribes were alive, they couldn't predict beyond that shift because they couldn't say which way it was going to go. You know, I mean, that's just how I see it. I think that.
Well, I think it was also deliberate, Sonia. We weren't supposed to see how it was supposed to go.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that was another thing too, was that we were probably not.
If we knew where it was supposed to go, then we wouldn't be going through all this garbage now. I
mean, it's about making a choice, you know, making a powerful choice.
Definitely.
And a part of the collective and a part of humanity to choose life rather than to choose death. Do you know? Definitely. And I think that we have chosen life because otherwise we wouldn't be here right now.
Beautiful, beautiful analogy. I love that. That's why I brought it up. I thought I just wanted to see how you fit that into your scheme of things. Now, I have dealt with an outstanding astrologer in my past. I haven't talked to him in eons. But one of the things that he said to me that always struck a chord, and that was that we literally can rewrite our astral charts. What would your response be to that?
My response would be that, yes, we have free will. Everyone has free will. And the way I understand what he said would be that, you know, your birth chart, you know, that's your blueprint and that's your basis from which you live your life or from which the potential of your life is possible, right? So it's like your seed, right? Yeah. But what you do with the energies and how you live them is completely up to you. And this is very nicely proven when you look at charts of twins, right? Look at charts of twins, for example, that were born at exactly the same place, the same time, the same mother, the same environment. If they were, let's say there's twins and they were adopted and they were put into different families, right? What you can see is that there's certain basic things that they have in common, but because of the choices they have made and the environment that they were brought up in, they have chosen different things. You know, they have made different life choices. And so they're very different from each other, although there is similarities, but still different, you know? And that's where free will comes in. You know, we have a choice in how we respond and react to our environment, you know?
Yeah, I agree. And the other,
sorry, I just want to say, if you come from an abusive family, for example, right? You have the choice to become a victim of that, and you can say, I will never heal. I will never be whole. I will never be able to fix this. I will never be a valid part of society because of my abuse. Or you can say, whoa, that really sucked, but wow, I've learned so much from this and I've become really strong because of this. And I can now be the person that I need to be so that this doesn't happen ever again to other people, not to my kids, not to other people in my environment. I'm going to be very conscious in how I deal with other people.
Yeah, I think there too, just to add a little bit into my background and what I see, I know that some people get so entrenched in astrology, and if they hear from an astrologer, you know, this is your life and this is what you're going to be, and, you know, it's kind of like a black and white situation in some ways. I met another astrologer who had done over 40,000 charts, and he looked at one individual in particular, and he said, this guy basically has a very low chance of ever getting out of a negative cycle of self-sabotage. And we got into this deep conversation about, you know, how the astral chart is really kind of like it's like a guide, you know, that we can use. And in the old days, apparently they used them a lot more than we do today, so that they could make decisions on the perfect timing with Mother Earth, with the seasons, et cetera, et cetera. It makes so much more sense. Yeah. But the other thing was, you know, he said there are charts that just come out where, you know, when the person's born, I mean, they're born into this chart where they're like screwed, you know, where they, they have like self-sabotage all over their chart, and they have bad luck all over their chart. And he said he started investigating this. Mm-hmm. He started analyzing it. And I have, you know, coming from the world of implant removal and demonic possession and all that, we have played a little bit with that on this end. And we're now seeing that people are able to blow through that preordained kind of dark strike against them on their astral chart by getting rid of being programmed and implanted.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very interesting.
I mean, it's definitely possible. I mean, I would say whenever I see a challenging chart, you know, when someone has a challenging chart, I will always say to my client, you know, you have a very ambitious soul. Because clearly, before you came into this lifetime, you decided that you're going to be able to overcome all these obstacles.
Well, that's a very nice way of putting it, Sonia.
But I think that's the way that is easiest for someone with a difficult chart to hear, because it's not that the chart is difficult per se. It's just that it takes more to really work through certain issues that you already came in with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, certain issues that you either already came in with from a past life, or certain issues that you came in with and then in this now lifetime as a child were reinforced or were relived, or something happened as a child that had you really, where you had to face challenges, you know, could be abuse, it could be, you know, neglect, it could be, you know, you were adopted, you know, whatever it may be, right? And so, but these challenges doesn't mean that you're going to have a bad life. It just means that the soul, before it came in, it was like, you know what? I want to be able to overcome all of these things. And so I'm going to set myself up with this chart, with this energy pattern, and with this environment. And then that way, I can overcome what I need to overcome.
Well, I think my $64 million question to you. Have you looked at presidents and world leaders?
I have not. No, I have not. I'm one of the very few astrologers who is not interested in public figures.
Well, don't you just love that about her? She's so straight up about it.
I honestly can't tell you why. I mean, once in a while, if I'm fascinated with a person, you know, I will look into their chart, you know, like if I love a musician and I will just, or I love an actor, I'll just be like, oh, I wonder what their chart looks like. I will look into it. But what I'm more fascinated with is with the everyday person, you know, I'm really, and that's probably also why I'm a life coach, you know, because I really, for me, it's all about supporting the people that live their everyday lives and that are not part of the public world, you know?
The only reason I asked is not because I'm that interested in the presidents.
But what I do know about political figures is that they usually have a very strong Leo energy and a strong Pluto energy.
That's what I was going to ask you.
Yeah, so strong Leo and strong, but that's, I mean, yeah, that I can tell you. But because Pluto is about power, you know, and Leo is about being very confident and being very, you know, wanting to be a leader, you know, Leos want to be leaders. And especially if people have, you know, Leo either on the top of their chart or on the ascendant, or they have a Leo sun sign, you know, I mean, our president right now is a, you know, Leo sun sign with Aquarius rising, and Clinton was a Leo sun sign as well with a Libra rising. So, I mean, I do know a little bit about them, you know, but it's not, I don't study it. Let's put it that way. You know, I mean, I look at it, you know, but I don't, like, I'm not
look
like...
Look at the real people.
Right. Look at the real people.
So, okay, now, you know, the charts themselves show the individual what their destiny is, right?
I would rephrase that. I would say the charts show what the potential of that person is.
Okay.
But when you say destiny, then it sort of, like, sounds a little bit like it's everything's predestined. And I would be careful with that, because I think that there's certain things that are maybe predestined, like certain big milestones might be predestined, but I don't think that everything is predestined.
Okay. And so if a person has their astral chart, for example,
yes,
what is the core house to look at as far as what is their destiny?
In terms of their path.
Right, right.
The career path or the soul path. So there's several things you can look at. In terms of career, you would look for the top of the chart, the MC. It's what's called the midheaven. It's the most public part of the chart. And so therefore, it's the side of you that you show to the world. And so therefore, it represents our long-term goals, our careers. It represents who we are in the outside world, how we're seen by other people publicly speaking. In terms of like soul path, which I think is a little bit different, right? Because your career path is not always your soul path, or your soul path is not always your career, but it's not always the same thing. It can be, but it doesn't have to be. And that's something that I think needs to be understood by people too, because a lot of people think that by finding their dream career, they're also living their soul purpose or their soul path. That's not necessarily the case, right?
Absolutely.
Some people, you know, they come to this planet to be with their family, you know, and that's part of their soul path, is to just learn about emotional connections, you know. And so unless they're having a career in acting or a career as a therapist, you know, they would maybe also make those emotional connections, right? But it doesn't have to be that, right? It doesn't have to be connected to your career at all. So for soul path, I look at the south node and the north node in the chart. And these are the moon's nodes. And the moon nodes are actually, they're not planets. They're not asteroids. They're specific points, connecting points between the moon traveling around the earth, and the sun, the earth traveling around the sun. Whenever these ecliptic cycles intersect, those points are the moon nodes. So I know this is probably a little bit too out there and too complicated.
I love it.
The moon nodes are the meeting points between the earth, the moon, and the sun. Basically. So the moon represents the unconscious, the sun represents the conscious, and the earth is the physical material body that we're on and that we're in, right? So as wherever we meet there, unconscious, conscious, and the physical experience, those are the moon nodes. And the moon nodes describe our soul's journey, where we come from, where we're moving to, and what we're the arc. It sort of shows us the arc of what we're here to explore and to experience. And I do specific soul purpose readings for people where I purely look at the moon nodes and at Pluto in the chart. So where I take out, I don't look at the whole chart. I just look at the moon nodes and Pluto to give people an idea of what they need to do in this lifetime in terms of that arc.
And you know how they say like the three most important things to look at are your sun, your moon, and your ascendant? Is that kind of the same thing as what you were just describing, the moon, the sun, and the earth?
No. Okay. So in astrology, they say that your personality, you know, what shows what you're most like is made out of the ascendant, which is your... That the ascendant is your persona. It's the way you step into the world. It's the ascendant is what was on the horizon when you took your first breath, and so you moved into the world or into life with that sign on the ascendant. And so the ascendant represents how we step into the world. It's our best foot forward. It's like how we show, like how we deal with the world. How we can handle the world. But it's like a mask. The ascendant is like a mask. It's not who we are. It's just how we show ourselves. So that people that don't know us yet, they sort of get a good first impression, right? Wow. So like I'm a Libra rising. So what I will do, when people don't know me, they will probably experience me more like a Libra, like sort of like someone who is like a mediator or that is able to very nicely balance opposites and make people comfortable and, you know, just kind of like this sort of sense of there's harmony in the room, right?
Yeah. Right.
But I am a Taurus, you know?
So I love Taurus.
You know, so when people get to know me and really know me, then they can see that my sun sign more, which is more this very grounded, a little bit stubborn, a little bit like kind of like, you know, it needs to be a certain way type of person, you know, like I know what I need to know and what works good for me, you know, that's more the Tauran energy, right? But then the moon, for example, that comes out when I get emotionalized, when I respond on an emotional level to the world. And my moon is in Scorpio. So that's a whole other level because you know, Taurus is very peaceful and very grounded. Scorpio, not grounded at all, not peaceful at all. It's like, woo, you know, energy just shoots out of you and your feelings are just all over the map and you have like a, there's like a pool of something that comes out of you and you don't even know what the hell is going on yourself. You're like, oh my God, whoa, you know? but you know, those are the three, the trinities of myself that most people will interact with. You know, it's either the Libra, the Scorpio, or the Taurus.
So, you know, I have known quite a few people who had five planets in the same, wait, they had five planets in the same sign.
Uh-huh.
What does that tell you when you see that in a chart?
Well, usually it's what we call in astrology a stellium. It means that there's planets aligned in one sign and they're very close to each other. And what it means is that there's sort of, there's a focus and an emphasis for that person on that particular energy. So in this lifetime, they have chosen to really work on one thing. They didn't want to, you know, spread themselves thin and just be all over the map. They wanted to really master something, you know, and they wanted to really like connect that one energy. And the other thing too with stelliums is that, you know, depending on what planets are involved, these planets influence each other. So it's not just about the sign that these planets are in, which is more exalted, obviously, because there's that many planets in that sign. But let's say you have like a moon-Neptune connection, you know, where the moon and Neptune are very close to each other. Now, even if they are in Capricorn, let's say, which is a very grounded earth sign, if the moon and Neptune are conjunct in Capricorn, you'd be an extremely intuitive person and you'd have to do something in the world that really resonates with that sensitivity and with that intuitiveness that you have. Does that make sense? So Neptune, which is a very intuitive, sensitive planet, will influence the moon, right? Which is also a very feeling-oriented. So even though your moon is in Capricorn, which would be a person who doesn't really deal with feelings very much and who's not, you know, particularly, you know, they're very practical, they're very, you know, achievement-oriented usually. They're very career-oriented usually. But if there's a Neptune planet right there, that shifts things quite a bit. That influences, that colors, you know, that Capricorn energy.
Wow. Okay. Now, what about, this is a question I've always had. Okay, let's say somebody is born above the equator in the northern hemisphere at the exact same time, birth time, whatever, as someone who's born below the equator. What would the difference be in the charts?
It's literally, it's flipped.
Wow. So it's really as above, so below, right? Like a mirrored.
Yes. Well, it is like, exactly. It's like a mirror image.
Mirror image.
Yeah. So what would be usually below the horizon would be above the horizon and vice versa.
And so when you look at someone's personal chart, if they have most of their planets above that horizon line, can you pretty much make an assumption that they're more outgoing and gregarious versus somebody who has most of their planets below, they're more withdrawn and maybe more private? Or
right. So when you have planets that are more on the lower side of the chart, you are, you're much, definitely more of an introvert, and you're definitely more resourceful within yourself. When you have more planets on the upper side of the chart, on the on the southern side of the chart, you're much more of an extrovert, and it's very important for you to interact with the outside world. You know, the outside world is a big playground for you. You know, you really need to work with the outside world. Most people will have a combination of things, you know. There's definitely people who are more introverted than other people. I mean, clearly, I mean, we know that just by meeting people, you know, that some people are more introverted than extroverted, but you will see that in their chart for sure. And then also I would say, it could also be connected to, the elements. So if you have more planets in earth and water, which are the feminine elements, you're bound to be a little bit more introverted. If you have more planets and signs in fire and air signs, then you would be a little more extroverted.
Interesting. That is really interesting. That makes a lot of sense. And now what about if, for example, I have a slew of planets in my ninth house? Okay.
Well, then that area of your life is clearly very important to you, you know, and the ninth house would have to do with, you know, travel. It has to do with learning about things. It has to do with philosophy. It has to do with law. It has to do with understanding life, the meaning of life, you know, and wanting to learn about life and wanting to explore and experience life.
Cool.
So if you have a lot of planets in that ninth house, then that area of your life is definitely going to be emphasized.
And do you agree that the 12th house is really showing if someone has psychic gifts, for example?
Not only. I wouldn't say only by itself.
Okay.
It would show that. Usually with astrology, what my experience is, you want to look out for multiple signs of something. The 12th house is the spiritual house. It's the house where we connect to our innermost selves, and to our higher selves, you know, to our spirit selves. And so, yes, it can definitely be, a sign for someone who is very intuitive and very psychic if they have a lot of planets there, absolutely. But it also depends on which planets and in what sign they're in. And it also depends on that person's upbringing and their environment, whether they were able to access that intuitiveness, whether they were able to nurture it or not. Because some people in the 12th house, they will just, it will stay completely unconscious. You know, a lot of stuff that happens in the 12th house is not always completely conscious to us. It's something that happens on an intuitive level that we can't explain to ourselves, or it's something that happens, you know, just in our dreams or through processing in our dream state or it could be. Just, it could be lived out in different ways, you know. It doesn't necessarily mean that person is strongly intuitive, but it could, absolutely. It definitely could.
So now, I don't know if you've dabbled in this because, again, this came from one of these master astrologers that I worked with at one time. And that was that he determined that if you looked at the wheel of your chart, yeah. For example, I have a Virgo sun.
Yeah.
So he said that my last lifetime was one house previous to that.
One sign previous
to that. Yeah, one sign previous to that.
Right.
Is that true?
Leo. I don't know.
Have you ever played with that? I'm just curious.
I mean,
he really got it down to a science, so I was like,
I mean, how would you know for sure?
I mean, I think, you know, that's the thing about astrology. It's in my opinion, it's if you've done a slew of charts, then you have the capacity to, you know, delve into some patterns.
Yes, but again, if it's connected to past lives, that's where it gets a little tricky, right? When you're dealing with the now life, when you're dealing with the life of the person that they're in right now, you know, you can actually do research. You can actually ask questions to the person. You can say, well, how does this play out in your life? What do you think about that? But when it comes to a past life, you can only always make assumptions unless you have the psychic ability to see past lives. But through the chart, I mean, if you're not a psychic, just what you see in the chart, how would you know? How would you know if it's true or not? You can't research that. You can't, you know what I mean?
Well, remember, you're dealing with an audience where that is our world. You know?
I'm not putting down past lives, but what I'm saying is that when it comes to astrology, right, if you want to make a case for that your sign before you came into this lifetime was a Leo because you're now a Virgo, how are you going to make that case?
Yeah.
To me, that seems completely impossible to make that case unless you just, you know, you have a past life regression and you look into that person's past life and they tell you in that past life regression that they are a Leo.
And well, I do believe he had that capacity and he did that also.
Okay.
So it was kind of interesting that he was able to come up with it. But now what about pets? What about animals? You know, like are they kind of being maneuvered the same way? Is this a guide for their life and how it unfolds?
You can definitely make a chart for pets. I mean, I made a chart for my cats. I mean, the thing with pets is that you don't always know when they're born, right? Because you True. Usually adopt them when they're 6 weeks old or when they're 1 year old or 2 year old. So if you weren't actually present at the birth of your pet, you're not going to be able to say when they were born exactly. But, you know, for example, one of my cats, I knew she was 6 weeks old when I adopted her. So I kind of approximated her birth day, right? I definitely don't know her birth time, but I know her birth day approximately. And I looked into what the planets were doing at that time. And there is a ton of Gemini energy in that chart. She's a Taurus, but she's got all this Gemini energy. And my cat talks nonstop. Like, she doesn't stop talking. She will be running around. I'm surprised she's not talking right now.
That's, you know what? My dog's that same way, Harley. Yeah. He's just like it. Talks all the time. Rawr, 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 rawr.
And my other cat doesn't say a peep, doesn't speak at all. Never speaks. Doesn't even when we step on him, he just goes, ah.
Well, that's a good cat to have.
Definitely more peaceful.
Yeah, definitely. Oh my God.
But he's got his own issues, you know.
Yeah. And don't we all, you know?
Don't we all, exactly.
So, okay, now how about this? You know, it's 2016.
Yes.
And I really wanted to provide this as a segue for people to just, you know, get a fresh start on the year and those that really want to make changes in their life, that really want to step into their power, they hear that from me a lot. You know, we need people fully on board right now. We need the enlightened ones to really get it, that they've got something to offer, to really start delving into their own potentiality, to become more creative, to gather all the insights that they have for the Renaissance, because we truly are stepping into a Renaissance period where we're getting into more art and music and expression, you know? And so do you have any kind of like maybe a quick technique that you can share with them as to how they can maybe glimpse what they're all about as far as their consciousness goes regarding their chart?
Well, I would say, I mean, I can talk a little bit about in general what I think 2016 is about.
Yes, and I was going to ask you that, definitely.
But then in terms of like using that, to make that a little bit more personal for them, I would recommend, you know, tuning in with my videos and my weekly forecast, because then they can apply then what's going on astrologically more to specifically themselves. Right. But just generally speaking, I would say that, you know, let's talk about 2015 for a second as a segue into 2016, because I think that's important to understand what that was about so that we can segue into 2016. 2015, there was a lot of inner work that we had to do. There's a lot of healing that had to happen on a collective level, on a global, on an individual level. We were digging really deep into particular wounds from the past, and not just collectively, also individually, you know, and we had to really let go of past conditioning, past hurts, past pain, past beliefs, you know, things that were just kind of holding us back. And so for anybody who was able to do that work, that's already a great start for 2016. If you have not been able to do that work, then 2016, there will be a lot more of that needs to happen for you, right? So depending on where you're at in terms of your consciousness level and in terms of your approach to how you have lived your life up until now, right? And how much in alignment you are with these energies. The other thing that I would say about 2015 and pretty much about since 2012 is that we're stepping more into a feminine energy, and that we're needing to learn how to balance the feminine with the masculine. And this is not so easy because we're so conditioned to work with the masculine energies, to be active, to be achieving, to be moving after things, going after things, and to be busy and to be, you know, to be successful and all these things. And that's very masculine. And so with the feminine energy now coming in more and that balance that needs to be created, we're needing to learn how to work with that energy and feel comfortable in it, you know, because feminine is all about being able to be with what is, being able to allow what is, being able to feel things, intuit things, mm-hmm. being able to receive rather than constantly do, go, and, you know, like go after stuff. Be able to actually work with what's going on around you and receive and interact and collaborate, you know? So we're learning how to adapt into this balance, you know? And this is new for all of us. And so I think it's maybe a little bit easier for people who are already comfortable with their feminine energies, but for people who are not so comfortable with the feminine energies, and that's men and women alike, by the way, you know, people who are not comfortable with their feminine energies are struggling a little bit more with this, you know, because it takes time to kind of like go into this place of like, oh, okay, I'm just going to relax right now and allow, and I'm just going to process. And I'm just going to wait until something comes to me and then I'm going to take action. Right? So it's not about not taking action, by the way. It's not about not using the masculine. It's about allowing both to interact with each other, allowing the feminine and the masculine, right?
You are describing my life to a T right now, because I am really realizing that at this stage of where I am at, The action that I'm taking is literally in more of a being state in receiving.
Yes.
If that makes sense.
Yes. And that's great. You know, that's great. If you're able to be in that state, if you can be comfortable as much as possible, you know, sometimes you won't be that comfortable in that state, but if you are comfortable, that's great, because it informs something much deeper, you know, because as you're more open and present and able to receive, you're actually much more collaborating with the universal energies.
Correct.
And that collaboration is very important, because through that collaboration, we can create much more, much bigger things than we have until now. You know, the human spirit is incredible, because the human spirit so wants to achieve and so wants to make things better and do great things in the world, right? But we're always limited by our own limitation that we put on ourselves, you know, which is that we're not quite using all the energies that are available to us. And so if we're not using the feminine energy, we're dropping a big part of what makes us great. Mm-hmm. You know, so by using all the energies equally, you're operating from a much more holistic place, much more wholesome place, which, by the way, is very much what Virgo is interested in. Virgo is very interested in wholesome approaches, in holistic approaches.
Yes.
You know, wants to make sure that it's healthy, and that the meaning healthy doesn't just mean physical health. It means healthy means it's whole. When something's whole, it's healthy, right? And Virgo is very much, and that brings me actually to what this year is about, 2016, which is very much about that Virgo energy, which is about us needing to be more conscious and more clear about what in our lives is not wholesome. What in our lives do we need to approach from a more holistic place? Where are we dropping stuff? You know, where are systems in place in our lives, large or small, collective or individual, at home, at work, in government, anywhere, right? There's so many systems. Where are they in place that are not operating in a holistic way, in a wholesome way? Because those systems are not going to be able to sustain themselves. And this is where the shift comes in, and this is what we're dealing with currently, is that we're needing to recognize that these systems can only sustain themselves and be strong if they are healthy. So we're learning about that in our own lives and collectively speaking. And the other part is that, you know, as we're moving towards, you know, getting more organized, getting more clear about things, getting more more interested in being of service to the whole planet, to all people, right? That is going to definitely create some huge improvements in the world, huge improvements. But what we also need to do is, at the same time, is we need to trust our intuition. We need to be conscious that the intuitive and the emotional is not just something that is an annoyance, or it's not just something that's just kind of like, you know, like whatever, it's just there and we're not going to do anything with it, right? We need to acknowledge that that's valuable. We need to acknowledge that the value of intuition and our feelings and our sensing is what helps us move into the direction of making things better and improving the systems in this world and in our own individual lives as well.
Yeah, it's like instead of ignoring our intuitive GPS system, which we've been brought up since the crib to do,
right,
frankly, you know, because of all the regimentation and the compartmentalization of, I mean, everything from how we're even seated within a corporation around a cubicle,
yes,
you know, within a cubicle, it feel, you know, that's just, all of that paradigm is collapsing.
Yes.
So I would imagine for an astrologer, this must be fascinating right now.
Absolutely. And we need to redefine how we see the intuitive energy, how we see the intuitive inside of ourselves, and how we see the emotional and the feeling side inside of us. Because, you know, Neptune moved into Pisces in 2012. And so since 2012, there's been much more of a sensitivity that's been built up in terms of like how we feel things, how we connect to other people, the things we feel. You know, if you've already been an intuitive at that point, your intuition probably shot up at that point.
Interesting.
But it's that even people that haven't been intuitive are now moving more into that direction because they're actually feeling things now. They're feeling their environment. They're feeling other people's feelings. They're feeling other people's thoughts. When I'm around another person, I mean, I've always been intuitive to begin with, but when I'm around another person, you know, if they think something that is judgmental, I feel it.
Mm-hmm.
If they think something that's loving, I feel it.
Yes.
And I don't have to know what they're thinking, but I'm feeling it. And so even if I'm not completely conscious of what that exact sentence is that they formed in their mind, I can feel the energy of it. I can feel the essence of that thought and that, you know, that nonverbal interaction. And that's what we're becoming more connected with. And so I think 2016 is very much about us needing to redefine how we understand that about ourselves and about how that's changing in the world and what that's changing in the world. And and more fully embracing that part of ourselves, because it also creates emotional intelligence. You know, if you can come from the point of view that everyone feels what another person is vibrating as, right, you will interact very differently with each other.
Absolutely. And it's almost like, you know, we've got the physical aspects down, we have the mental aspects down of the body. We're now shifting into the emotional, you know, bringing that into balance and really acknowledging that it does exist. Because if we acknowledge our emotional bodies, even if you're not that enlightened, there's no way you can justify war. There's no way you can justify the gazillions of people starving to death and the deforestation of our planet. You know, we must get there in order to clean up our planet.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I agree. And I think that's part of the shift, is that connection to the emotional body on a more mass level.
That's awesome. That's really good. Now, what are you seeing as far as economics go for 2016?
That, you know, it's difficult to make predictions like that. But I would say, well, we have a Saturn Neptune square in the summer of 2016, and there's also a Jupiter Saturn square that's happening as well in the spring of 2016. So both of those things would indicate that there's definitely uncertainty in regards to economics. People are going to be a little bit trigger happy or a little bit scared. And of course, economics usually is connected to the emotional responses that people have to life, right?
And very true.
It's ironic, of course, because even though we're not in touch with our own feelings very often, the economy is very much at the effect of our own feelings, right? So the more conscious we can be of what we're feeling and how we're connecting to those feelings, actually the more we can consciously direct how the economy goes, right?
Good point.
Right. But the thing with the Saturn, Jupiter and Saturn Neptune square is that we're learning to stretch ourselves, and we're learning to make adjustments in regards to our spiritual selves and our physical selves. So who we are spiritually or on a soul level, and who we are in a human level in the material plane, we're needing to make these adjustments. We're needing to learn how to work that together, because, you know, there's people that are only on the spiritual plane, basically. I mean, they have a human body, but really they're not fully here, right? And they don't fully function in the material world. And then there are people who are the exact opposite, who are totally in the material world, but they can't look beyond that at all. Material is all they see, right? And of course, neither one of that is perfect, because, you know, if you're not capable of allowing yourself to connect to your higher self and live in the physical world in a healthy way, then you're kind of missing the point of why you're here, you know?
Certainly.
So it is important to connect the two and to find a way to work with the energies equally, you know?
Well, do you feel that any of the charts or the 2016 energies, do you see a lot of disruption and chaos and riots, or do you see it more as the awareness is bringing about a little bit more of a balanced state of being able to react to it, even if they aren't that enlightened and understand it?
Here's what I always say, and this is what I firmly believe, is that every single person will experience 2016 in their own way.
Good point.
The reason for that is because the outer universe is a reflection of our inner universe. So depending on where you're at with your own consciousness, with your own nurturement of yourself, your own relationship with yourself, the more compassionate you can be with yourself, the more kind you can be with yourself, the more you can work with who you are and what you got, right? The easier 2016 will be. the more you are resisting yourself, the more you're fighting against yourself, and the more you're focused on the outside world rather than on your inside world, the more challenging it will be, because you're not actually connecting to yourself, you know? So it is definitely, and that's why I wanted to start with 2015, because 2015 was sort of like the ramp.
Oh yeah. It was grueling, you know, for so many people. I mean, it was just such a, you know, cleaning out your closet, very accelerated.
Cleaning out all the stuff that, and we're going to continue doing that in 2016. However, for those of us who have already started that process, it will be a very different experience than for those of us who are just starting now.
God, it's so funny you say that. The other day we were all sitting around, we were talking, and I said, man, we were part of the first wave and took on a pretty intense, difficult role. You know, most of us have been at this for 20, 30, 40 years, some of us, okay? Not myself, but, you know. And we've had to do it the hard way. We've had to go through all these major, very slow, very intense, you know, kind of where the paradigm was, oh, I've got to go through the pain to understand it. Right. Now you've got these newbies coming in, and they don't have to go through that. We've kind of already blazed the trail for them. The information is readily available now. The whistleblowers are out there and alive and well for the most part. And now they can just dive in and just kind of take a fast track. You know, it seems like it's, but it's going to be so much more intense for them because they're doing a crash course of what we've gone through over the course of 20, 30, 40 years.
Well, I think it's because of the density, right? Because the density used to be more density.
True.
Energetically speaking. And now there's much more opening. The energy has opened up. And so there's less density, so we can move faster. And that's why life is speeding up. You know, there's a lot of, you know, if you look at a curve, you know, it's kind of like, you know, we started out here and it was growing very slowly. And now it's like, whew, and we're moving at this high speed, really, you know.
And it's not going to stop either.
It's not going to stop. No, it's going to go quicker and quicker. So in order for us to keep up with that speed, it's very important to connect to the inner. Because the inner is where you have peace. If you know yourself, and if you're connected to yourself in a healthy way, that's where your place of peace is. Whatever happens around you in the outside world, that's going to become possibly more and more chaotic, mm-hmm. You know, more and more insane in a way.
Yeah.
But the thing is, it doesn't necessarily have to be all bad, right? It's not that it's all bad. I'm not saying that. But there's going to be, you know, so many different directions that we can be pulled into and that we can look at things. I mean, the diversity is like just so insane, right? And that diversity creates something wonderful in a sense because we all get a chance to be ourselves. So that's the good news. But what it also creates, the sense of like, well, where shall I go? Where shall I focus? And so there is where the key comes in about the inner world and where you really have to get very clear about who you are and what you are all about, because that is not going to change. That inner world is that's your peace place. That's your grounding place.
Good point.
The outside world isn't. The outside world is like a whirlwind, you know?
Yeah, no kidding. Well, now, have you looked at, are there any particular things you can tell us about, you know, some of the major superpowers of the world? You know, do you see any activity through astrology, like, say, from Russia or China or the Mideast? You know, what are you glimpsing from that?
I have to admit, I haven't done that. And the reason why I don't do that, and I know a lot of astrologers do, they look into, you know, world politics and countries and things like that. And the only reason why I don't do that is because it usually leaves me feeling helpless. It usually leaves me feeling I have no power. And so the way I see it is that the more you can empower yourself, the more you can feel empowered in the world, the bigger of a difference you can make. And the moment you start looking at things in the outside world that disempower you or that make you feel helpless, that's when you start to become smaller, and that's when you can't make the difference that you're here to make. And so, and I'm not saying, you know, be blind to what's going on. I'm not saying, you know, like, don't be up on, you know, what's going on in the world. But I am saying, you know, pay attention to where you gain energy and where you lose energy. Pay attention to what energizes you and what makes you feel better about yourself, and pay attention to what doesn't. Because that is a clear sign that you know, if you're spending too much time on things that de-energize you and that don't make you feel good about yourself or the rest of the world, you're moving on an energetic downward spiral. And you are disempowering yourself. And so I always, that's my firm belief. And it's also something that I just know from my own life experience in how I do things, is that, you know, usually when I go to a place where I, you know, where there's injustice or where there is things happening that are just cruel, and, you know, I feel like shit. You know, pardon my language, you know, when I go there.
Right.
So what I do instead is, instead of going to these places that don't make me feel good and where I really can't control, because I can't control what Putin is going to do this year, right? Or what the presidential election will be like in America. I can't control that. But what I can control is, you know, what I focus on and where I want to make a difference. And I choose to make a difference by empowering other people through the tool of astrology, and to help them be more themselves, to help them be more powerful in their own right. And that's what makes me feel good about myself.
Well, right on. And that's what it's all about. And you know what? That's why I was drawn to you. I was very, very impressed with some of the videos that you've put out. And, you know, we're actually, I can't believe it, we're almost up to the 2-hour mark. See what I mean?
No, it just flew by.
I just got to tell you guys, she's like, how long is this interview? And I said, oh, it's 2 hours. She goes, wow. You know, she kind of went, I said, trust me, 2 hours flies by. Yeah, right. She's like, 2 hours?
But you're right. It goes so fast.
So, okay, before we let you go, what would be a final, you know, little tidbit to give everybody for this month and this particular time that we're in Mercury retrograde? What's the greatest thing that they can either focus on or do at this time?
Well, actually, we're just about to leave the Mercury retrograde. So Mercury's stationing right now as we speak, and it will go direct on January 25th. I hope that's correct.
Yeah, that's what I have down too.
Yeah, January 25th.
Yeah. I'm not the astrologer, guys.
Right.
I'm kidding.
So usually the retrograde phase of a planet has to do with kind of tapping into that energy internally and kind of like clearing something out or becoming more clear about something within yourself. And because Mercury was in Capricorn, it's really about becoming more responsible in your own right in terms of like how you think, what you think, how you speak, what you speak, how you communicate, what you put out there, basically, what you say about yourself, how you talk to yourself even, right? Like to become more responsible about that, more real about that, and more authentic, you know, just more authentic. Capricorn is a very authentic sign. And so it means that we need to take a look at these things, right? And that's the Mercury retrograde. And as soon as Mercury goes direct, we're getting a chance to implement these new discoveries that we've learned during the Mercury retrograde. Once it's gone direct, we can implement them in our actual lives, you know, in the way we're actually communicating, in the way that we're actually thinking and interacting. And the things that we authentically want to create, because Capricorn is a very strong manifester. Capricorn knows how to manifest things in the real world. Wow. Because it's an earth sign, and it cares, it very much cares about achieving things. And so with the Capricorn energy, you know, every thought that we have, Mercury in Capricorn, it's going to manifest. It's going to, you know, we're going to, in some way, you know, we're sending out the waves, and those waves are going to look for matching waves, and boom, and we're going to start to create something real.
Right. Well, awesome. God, this is such a great time then of the year. I mean, the energies really support this, even though this isn't the true new year, like you said. You know, the true new year is at the spring equinox, right?
Well, the spring equinox is that's the new year in terms of the
seasons, right? And Mother Earth and that sort of thing. Okay, well,
equinox, actually this particular equinox is going to be very powerful as well, because we're March and April are going to be very important months. We're experiencing a lot of planetary shifts in March and April. There's going to be a solar eclipse and a lunar eclipse that's going on in March. And so March and April are definitely going to be very powerful. So the best way to navigate through these 2 months will be, as best as you can, stay as open as possible, stay as flexible as possible, stay as connected and centered within yourself, and really, really look for aligning yourself energetically with these different patterns that are going to be happening as best as you can. And of course, I recommend, you know, staying in alignment with what's going on with the planets and astrologically speaking, but you can also do it, you know, via other modalities and via other tools, you know. And if you're an intuitive person, of course, then you would definitely, you know, be able to tap into these energies intuitively as well. So just listen to that.
Sounds great. And Sonia, I don't know if you're interested, but maybe perhaps in the future we can pull you back and we can go over just kind of a map of the main energies for the year of 2016, kind of like you do it like no one else. I know there's some that are out there right now, and I know this is a reset year, is from what a lot of people are saying, where we're redoing, reviewing, reperceiving, reconstructing everything, because we must bring down the old matrix that is no longer serving us as we expand ourselves, as we increase our intuitiveness and our feeling about other people, animals, trees, plants, Mother Earth, you know, whatever. So this is necessary, and I think that'd be great for us to pull in something like that maybe next month.
Absolutely, that'd be great.
Okay, well, thank you, Sonia Francis, and I'm sure if you guys all think she's just as pretty as I think she is. And don't forget to visit her website at astrologercoach.com. Please support Galactic Connection and Sonia with her awesome New Year's reading. We'll both appreciate it, and I'm sure you will too. And she'll be able to really give you some core soul reading, intuitive information like I have not seen a lot of other people do. So she's got a true gift. I really am impressed. And as always, lots of love to all of you. I can't begin to tell you, every day I get up thanking the world, the universe, and all the company of heaven for being here. And I am so honored to be here and to be able to assist all of you. So have a wonderful rest of the week. And again, check out our blog, galacticconnection.com, our implant removal processes, our spiritual past life clearing, my violet ray alchemy. We've got our quantum healing, which is galactic energetic solutions. That's just about to be launched. We've got the master's course, which is about to be launched. We've got regression therapy with cosmic awareness and our alchemy. We're going to team together. That's about to be launched. We've got a lot of stuff in the works. So stay tuned and continue to know that we are on the other side and we are here. and we're here to serve you and sending you lots of love. You guys take care and have a wunderbar rest of the day. Okay, bye everybody. Thanks, Sonia.
Bye-bye.